I've called the House Labor and Commerce meeting to order. It's April 3rd. The time is 3:20 p.m. Members present are Representative Hannan, Representative Reback, Representative Fields, Representative Tallarico, Co-Chair Stutes, myself, Chair Wool. We have a quorum to conduct business. Before I begin, I'd like to introduce my committee aide, Ashley Strauch, and her family. And Sophia Tenney as our current Labor Commerce Secretary, and Flannery Ballard, the LIO moderator. Got it all right. Several items on the agenda today. We'll start with a confirmation hearing for the Board of Nursing nominees Shannon Connolly and Emily Henry. Then we'll pass out the remaining boards and commission appointees as a group. After that, we'll have a first hearing for HB 91 from Representative Johnston, and a first hearing from another first hearing for HB 102. So, confirmation hearing, Board of Nursing. Speaker referred the following: Governor's appointment to the House Labor and Commerce Committee, Shannon Connolly and Emily Henry for the Board of Nursing. Members have received the applications. We'll begin with Shannon Connolly, who is on the line, and will testify. So, Shannon, are you there?
Hello?
Hi, Shannon.
Hi, sorry. It came on and said the line is unmuted, I think, when you start talking to me.
Okay. If you want to, do you have a statement for us or opening testimony? Identify yourself, and if you have anything prepared, that'd be great. If not, we can just ask you questions.
Sure. Okay. So my name is Shannon Connolly. I reside in Palmer, Alaska. I grew up in Anchorage, and we moved out into the valley about 18 years ago. So a little bit of my background, I did teach elementary school in the Anchorage School District for 9 years, but am currently home with my children raising them. And I also at this time serve on the City of Palmer's Parks, Recreation, and Cultural Resources Board. My term ends in October. I wanted to serve on the nursing board. I have a child that has some health issues, and so we've had a lot of experience with some really wonderful nurses, and I keep hearing all the concerns about having a nursing shortage, and I'd like to do whatever I can to ensure that we'll be able to continue to have quality nursing, have quality nurses here in our state, because my family does indeed benefit from that. And so that's just a little bit about me. I'm not sure what questions you all have for me. I'm sure you have something.
I think we'll come up with something.
Okay.
And so, Shannon, you're applying for the public seat. Is that correct?
That is correct, yeah.
You're not in the nursing profession, but you admire and have respect for the profession and wish to help it out. Is that correct?
That is correct, yes.
Okay. Thank you, Shannon. Questions from committee members? Representative Fields.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Ms. Connolly, for your service to the Anchorage School District. Do you see the nursing board, a proper role for the nursing board, being restricting in any way reproductive health services?
Honestly, no. I think that a lot of that just falls under individual practices, making choices. At this point, we did have our first meeting last week, and we're still kind of coming to grips with what all we're doing. It's a brand new board. We have one person who was on previously, and so none of that has come up. We're just kind of looking at getting up to speed and making sure that we're we had our training, and then we did go through and find helping out with people who were looking at problems with their licenses or looking at issues that whether or not they needed to have some help with or have their licenses revoked. And so that's kind of what we've been facing at this point.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
But, hopefully that answered your question.
It did.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Fields. Any other questions from members of the committee? I'd like to also let the record reflect that Representative Stutes has joined us a few minutes ago.
Thank you. I have a
question. Representative Stutes has a question.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Yeah, I do have a question. What's the popcorn kernel?
Oh, Oh yes, one of my volunteer problems. I've worked a lot with the Boy Scouts of America, and so a popcorn colonel is someone who oversees all the units for selling popcorn. It's their major fundraiser. Just like the Girl Scouts have their cookie fundraiser, the Boy Scouts, one of their big fundraisers is usually selling popcorn. So I ever saw all the units in the valley for 2 years, helping them out with making sure they get their sales going and getting the orders to them.
Aha. Uh-huh. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Oh, you're welcome.
Any other questions? Seeing and hearing none. Well, we'd like to thank you, Shannon, for calling in today. We're talking to a lot of the Board of Nursing app nominees. As you know, the board was, I think, with the exception of one, has all been replaced, including the executive administrator. So we're just trying to get some time with all the appointees just to see if they have any questions or if we have any questions for them. So Representative Hannon.
Thank you. Through the chair, you are a public member appointee, and the Board of Nursing is statutorily about to expire, and I'm curious as to whether you discussed that at the board meeting you were able to attend and whether you think you can advocate for and support the extension and continuation under statute of the Board of Nursing in Alaska.
Yes, that was brought up at our last meeting. So Joe LaFleur, who was our chair, and he was just elected as chair again last week, he is currently working on that because he does have the history with it, and he's been, what we were told, he is testifying and helping out and keeping the board going. A little bit of that was discussed. I anticipate that at our next meeting in April, later this month, we'll get more information on what we can do to be advocates for that. Like I said, at this point, it's a brand new board. We are all just trying to find out what we need to do and to be really effective and make sure that we're not hindering people and making sure the process is going through. And I know that is on our agenda for our next meeting.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Connelly, have you served on other boards in the past?
This is only my second board. I'm currently serving with the City of Palmer and the Parks Rec and Cultural Development, and so this is only my second board I'm serving with, but it's definitely a learning process. This is an obviously much more intense board to be working with, but I'm glad that I have some experience working with a board, but this definitely is a steep learning curve. And I'm really glad that we do have Joe on the board, who has been very helpful and is being able to kind of guide us through and give us a lot of avenues to look into so that we can learn and be prepared.
Thank you. Representative Stutes has a question.
Thank you. Ms. Henry, how long have you lived in Alaska?
I have lived here my entire life. I was born in Anchorage.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
At this point, I'm going to open public testimony and asking if there's anyone in the room that wants to testify regarding Ms. Connelly. Seeing none online. No more questions from the committee. Okay, thank you, Ms. Connelly. I think we're going to move on to our next. No, I'm going to have it for this one. We're going to go on to our next appointee. So thank you, Ms. Connelly. And Emily Henry.
Hi, this is Emily Henry.
Hi, Emily. Can you state your name and any statement that you have prepared for us?
Yes. Again, my name is Emily Henry. I am originally from Magnolia, Delaware, graduating from Delaware Tech Community College in 2011, passing my boards directly out of school with my LPN in June of 2011. I started working as a home care nurse, where I worked mostly with special needs children in their homes and taking them to school. I would care for them in any way possible, since I was the only one in the home typically, taking on many skills nurses are taught in school, including respiratory care, therapies like physical therapy, occupational therapy, and speech therapy. I would do medications, enteral feeding, and assist in helping my patients with the best quality of life possible by being the best nurse advocate I could. I decided to move to Alaska 2 years ago after accepting a job at Providence Extended Care in Anchorage. I'm currently caring for 12 residents during my scheduled shift. I closely work with my CNAs and therapy services. I'm currently precepting most nurses that arrive at Tech and show them our policies and procedures to help make them the best nurses they can be. I am also a care and reliability coach, which helps promote the tools of Providence to create healthy, safe environments for our staff and residents. When asked about being on the board, Alaska Board of Nursing, and why I would like to sit on the board, I feel I have great leadership skills and I'm able to take the facts and make educated decisions for our Alaska nurses and the people of Alaska. Having home care experience, I feel that I will be able to have more insight on being out on your own as a nurse in many different environments and find a way to care for that patient in the safest way possible within the nurse's scope of practice. I will please accept any questions anybody may have for me. I'm very excited for this opportunity, and what I may lack in years of experience, I feel that I can make up for in my enthusiasm and willingness to learn. Thank you.
Thank you. Any question for Ms. Henry from the committee? Representative Hannon?
Thank you, through the chair. Ms. Henry, pleased to have your application for the board. And you're fulfilling one of the seats that requires you to be a licensed nurse. I asked nurse applicants to the board 2 days ago. There was an audit done of the nursing board that was released a year ago, and one of the areas of deficit was our review of CNA programs across Alaska, and that we had not done adequate review, making sure that our training options for CNA licensure programs, and I know that you're not a CNA, but you have experience in it. What kind of thoughts can you bring to making sure that we have licensure programs for all of our levels of nursing that are adequate in Alaska and hopefully help meet the demand for those positions across Alaska?
Thank you for that question. Actually, because I work so closely with the CNAs, I actually get to work a lot with student CNAs that come into my facility at Providence Extended Care and see their skills and where they can improve, as well as be able to have a nurse give them further education that they may not get and grasp in the classroom, but that hands-on experience is where it really clicks for a lot of people. I feel that with the board, one of the things that they had lacked was making sure that they're doing prompt on-site visits for any type of, questions that, is this program working well? Are they working within their passing rates? Why are their passing rates lower than others? So every 2 years, there has to be an on-site visit to the training program, as well as while they're being trained in the clinical setting. So like coming and seeing the CNAs working with getting their clinical time in. The other thing is every 2 years or every year, they have the training facility has to send in a self audit. So I know that with my first week on the board last week, all of these things came up and we did have questions about with two different facilities, and they have until I want to say the end of the summer. I don't know. I believe the exact date was in July to be able to bump up their scores, and their teachers have to be able to get these students with better scores and better rates. If not, then the facility may be terminated. Those are the types of things that we on the board may have to do. And if that is what it takes to get really great quality CNAs and nurses out there, then that's what the board's going to have to step up and do. And I'm prepared to do that if need be.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Fields.
Thanks, Ms. Henry, for your services in LPN. Just had a quick question. Do you think it's the role of the nursing board to in any way restrict access to women's health or reproductive health care services?
I don't feel that there's any reason for the board to restrict anything within women's health. You know, being a female myself and having my own personal experiences with women's health, I'm a great advocate for my own personal self and, you know, wanting everybody to get their everything checked out. You know, breast cancer is one of the biggest things for women, as well as heart disease. And, you know, getting women out to their proper checkups and things can be really hard. But if you give them more information, give them the correct education, then they're going to be willing to go to their appointments and go from there with it.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any other questions from the committee? Seeing none, I'll just want to go over a couple things. So this board position is specifically an LPN seat. Is that correct, Ms. Henry?
Yes, and I currently hold a license in the state of Alaska as an LPN.
Okay, and you've been an LPN since 2011, it looks like. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And been in Alaska 2 years, and you came up to Alaska to work at Providence. Was that the only reason you came up to Alaska?
No, it's not. I actually met my now fiance online, and that was kind of my move to Alaska.
Okay, now we're getting to the issue. All right. And it looks like you're an avid, you're a hunter?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, my father has come to Alaska about every year since I was a kid, either fishing or hunting. My family has been a big advocate for the Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation, the National Turkey Federation, as well as working with the NRA. I also, back home in high school and college, was part of the Future Farmers of America, an FFA. More so, initially wanted to be in the veterinary field. However, finding out that FFA was a little bit more about the leadership skills that I was able to obtain, being in the seats there, including reporter, vice president, president, and campus community coordinator. I was able to learn a lot of skills on leadership, and it was an awesome experience. So I really enjoyed all of that. So I'm a very outdoorsy person, yes.
Okay. And you'd been here before, it sounds like, obviously, correct?
Well, I actually never came up to, what's kind of funny, exactly 2 years ago today was my first day in Alaska.
Oh, okay. So your dad had come up every year for a bunch of years, but you never came with him.
Yeah, no. Instead of taking my hunting trip to Alaska, I decided to go to Africa with my dad. So I didn't get the chance to come up to Alaska, but I've taken it by storm. My first year here, I did 3,000 miles of biking. I hiked. I believe I did 10 different peaks in that first year. I completed my first triathlon, first half marathon, and first fat bike race. So definitely took Alaska by storm. Wow. Delaware has none of this kind of stuff there.
I guess so. All right. Well, thank you for calling in. It looks like there's no more questions. We still have public testimony open. Anyone want to testify about Emily Henry for the Board of Nursing? Seeing and hearing none, I will close public testimony, and we'll move on to our remaining business. Thank you, Ms. Henry, for calling in today.
Thank you very much.
Having completed our comments, Representative Ledoux.
The Labor and Commerce Committee has reviewed the qualifications of the governor's appointees and recommends that the following names be forwarded to a joint session for consideration. Shannon Connolly, Emily Henry. This does not reflect any intent by any of the members to vote for or against this individual during any further sessions for the purposes of confirmation.
These names will be forwarded to the joint session. We'll take a brief at ease to sign the report. This time we'll be forwarding out the remaining governor's appointees to the joint session. The following names will be forwarded. Board of Massage Therapists, Julie Endel. Board of Certified Direct Entry Midwives, Dana Espindola, Kathy Mosier. Occupational Safety and Health Review Board, Vincent Perez. Board of Examiners in Optometry, Brad Cross. Board of Pharmacy, Leif Holm. Board of Physical and Occupational Therapy, Enlo Walker. Board of Psychologists and Psychological Associate Examiners, Matthew DeMeyer, Aaron Johnson. Board of Certified Real Estate Appraisers, Ashley Stetson. Real Estate Commission, Cheryl Markwood, Jamie Matthews, Peggy Ann McConaughey, Margaret Nelson, Jesse Sumner. Board of Social Work Examiners, Jeffrey McCormick, Colleen Vague. Board of Veterinary Examiners, Scott Flame. Alaska Workers' Compensation Board, Bradley Austin, Randy Belts, Charles Chuck Collins Jr., Bob Doyle, Julie Duquette, Sarah Faulkner, Diane Thompson, Kimberly Ziegler, Sarah LaFave. State Board of Registration for Architects, Engineers, and Land Surveyors, Philip Schneider. Representative Ledoux may have a motion.
The Labor and Commerce Committee has reviewed the qualifications for the governor's appointees and recommends that the names be forwarded to a joint session for consideration. This does not reflect intent by any of the members to vote for or against these individuals during any further sessions for the purposes of confirmation.
These names will be forwarded to the joint session. We'll take a brief at ease to sign the report. And before we take an at ease, our next bill up is HB 91. So if there's any setup for media, now would be a good time to do it. Our next item on the agenda is HB 91. This is our first hearing on the bill. Representative Johnston, who is not available right now, and her staff, Aaron Schein, join us at the table and present the bill. I'll note we also have Sarah Chambers, Division Director of Corporations, Businesses, and Professional Licensing in the room, as well as Dr. Abby Lang, the President of the Alaska Association of Naturopathic Physicians, online to answer any questions. So, Aaron, you may proceed.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the Labor Commerce Committee. For the record, my name is Aaron Schein, and I'm staff to Representative Jennifer Johnston, District 28. Representative Johnston sends her apologies for not being able to be here today. She's otherwise disposed in House Finance with the operating budget amendments. Today, I am here to present House Bill 91, which clarifies statute to allow naturopathic doctors, which from now on I might be calling them NDs, to be able to practice their full scope of their training and education in Alaska. Recent years, we have seen strict regulatory interpretation of statutes, which result that naturopathic doctors in our state are not able to write prescriptions or perform minor office procedures, despite the fact that they are trained to be able to do this, and keeping in mind that other providers in Alaska, like nurse practitioners and physician assistants, are able to provide the same services with equivalent or lesser training. However, House Bill 91 is not advocating for one or another health care provider. Naturopathic doctors already licensed in Alaska and are already integrated into the care model in Alaska. Many Alaskans already use naturopathic medicine as a complement to their medical care. House Bill 91 is purely about allowing a group of primary care providers to practice the scope for which they are educated and trained, and is one piece in addressing Alaska's primary care shortage. Passage of this bill means Alaskans who choose naturopathic care can avoid duplicative visits for service if their care requires it. For example, if a patient who sees a naturopathic doctor that is in need of an antibiotic for an ear infection needs an adjustment to their hypertension medication, needs to get a vaccination, or even removing a suture, they will need to see a provider who can have prescriptive or minor surgery authority, therefore duplicating the service and increasing healthcare costs for the patient and for the system. Please note that while House Bill 91 would allow naturopathic doctors to prescribe, it does not allow them to prescribe controlled substances nor chemotherapeutic agents such as Xanax, opioids, or chemo drugs. Alaska's naturopathic doctors have sought to address the regulatory restrictions of their practice through the legal system, but the Supreme Court determined that the statute as written is in fact written in a way that mandates the limit on their scope. House Bill 91 will make it clear that Alaska's naturopathic doctors should not be restricted from providing the care for which they are trained and that their patients require. Some of you might be familiar with this legislation in the past, proposing similar changes to their scope of practice. You might also be aware of the compelling support for this bill from Alaskans seeking greater health care options and from many medical providers practicing in Alaska already. The value of the care provided by naturopathic doctors is recognized by many in the medical community who have long-running relationships with providing complementary care. Orthopedic doctors value their tools for helping patients with weight management. Oncologists value the stress management, inflammation reduction, and dietary elements of their patients' care. Large medical systems throughout the United States, such as the Providence Health System, includes naturopathic medicine in their integrative systems. And cancer treatment centers, such as the Seattle Cancer Care Alliance, include naturopathic care as part of their whole-person treatment approach. Opponents to similar legislation in the past have made claims about the schooling, training, and qualifications of naturopathic doctors that are simply untrue. Naturopathic doctors attend 4-year postgraduate medical programs accredited by the Council of Naturopathic Medical Education and the accreditation organization recognized by the U.S. Department of Education. Students applying for naturopathic medical school have several science-based prerequisites that they must meet, such as chemistry, physics, psychology, and biology, prior to admission, and once accepted, their education training is heavily science-based, including gross anatomy, which is cadaver dissection, physiology, biochemistry, and anatomy. Alaska's licensure structure ensures that the naturopathic doctors practicing in Alaska have attended an accredited institution and are recognized by the federal government, and who have passed licensure examination provided by the North American Board of Naturopathic Examiners. Of the 23 states who are regulated or oversee the profession of naturopathic doctors, House Bill 91 will bring bring Alaska in line with 15 other states that have varying degrees of prescriptive authority and approximately 13 states that can perform minor office procedures. In preparing for this bill, I discovered that according to the Corporation's Business and Professional Licensing Fiscal Year 18 report, compared to the present day database of how many naturopathic doctors are practicing in Alaska, that number fell from 54 to 46. Anecdotally, I asked friends and naturopaths, why was there a decrease in naturopaths that are practicing in that time period? And anecdotally, I believe that there are some naturopaths that have left the state seeking to be able to practice in other states in which they would be able to fully practice in their scope of education and training. As we proceed with your consideration of this legislation, I encourage you to raise any questions or claims that are brought to you so I can proactively address them. With that, Mr. Chairman, thank you for hearing House Bill 91, and I'm happy to answer any questions or walk through a sectional analysis if that's the will of the committee.
Thank you, Ms. Shine. Any questions from the committee? Seeing none. You said there's 23 states that are regulated right now. That means that there's 27 states that are unregulated. And that, how does that work?
Mr. Chair, I believe that the states that are regulated, if the states that are regulated, there are the state or the governing body has decided these are the qualifications that you meet. If you're in an unregulated state, it's quite possible that there are individuals that go to non-accredited schools as well as accredited schools and set up practices as naturopathic doctors, and there's no oversight from the state.
Could naturopaths in those states prescribe drugs or do minor office procedures if there was no regulation at all?
Mr. Chair, I do not believe that they would be able to do that. I believe that you need to be registered or licensed within a state to be able to prescribe a medication, but I'll verify that and get back to you.
Or the procedures like removing sutures or what have you.
It's quite possible that someone that has set up a naturopathic clinic that is not licensed in one of the regulated states could possibly be performing those, and there would be no oversight.
Okay, thank you. Representative Ledoux.
So in Alaska, naturopaths can't prescribe. Are they regulated?
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, they are regulated and they are not able to prescribe.
So
follow up.
In the statute, it specifically says they can't prescribe. Is that how it works?
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, that is correct.
Thank you.
Representative Fields.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Through the chair, it seemed pretty clear, and thanks, Ms. Shine, for explaining to me the difference in state regulation. It seems pretty clear that there's an advantage in regulation in terms of transparency for consumers, and I was hoping to ask Ms. Chambers, in her view, is there adequate authority within her division at this time if someone just put out a shingle, Zach Fields, naturopath, come on in and I'll take your sutures out. So with your consent, Mr. Chairman, I'd just like to hear her perspective on the enforcement authority of the division.
Sure. Ms. Chambers, you want to come forward?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Sarah Chambers. I'm the director of the Division of Corporations, Business and Professional Licensing. Through the chair, Representative Fields, right now naturopaths are a licensed profession, and we do have enforcement authority to not only enforce the existing statutory and regulatory restrictions on naturopaths, but also to regulate unlicensed practice.
Follow up. So I don't know if this has happened in practice, and I guess I'd be interested if it has, but if someone just insisted on continuing to advertise themselves as a naturopath, but they hadn't gone through the proper training, would you have the ability to shut down that business if there was an egregious case like that in the interest of public health and protecting consumers?
Through the chair, Representative Fields, for all of our licensed professions, all 43 of the various programs and over 100 different professions, we do typically have that authority. It's individualized within each statute, and so I would need to double check on the lengths at which we could go with naturopaths, but we have a process for those who are practicing any one of our professions without a license, and if it extends beyond our civil authority, would include law enforcement for criminal authority if needed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Ms. Chambers.
Thank you. Representative Hammond.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Chambers, how long has the state of Alaska licensed naturopathic doctors?
Through the chair, Representative Hannon, that is a great question. Ms. Shine might know.
Through the chair, Representative Hannon, since 1986.
Thank you. Follow up. Do you have any sense, Ms. Chambers, of how frequently you've had complaints about the practice of naturopathic doctors in Alaska? And would you deem it as a, I'm sure you don't know the statistics off the top of your head, but maybe you do. Is it an area where you find high levels of complaints and concern from consumers, medium level, or low levels of consumer concerns about the profession?
Through the chair, Representative Hannon, I indeed do have that statistic on the top of my head, and we have had 33 complaints over the last 20 years. Most of those complaints have been pretty low level or ultimately found to be unfounded. So I would say that compared to other programs, it's a very low consumer complaint driven profession.
Thank you.
Ms. Chambers, if you can, what's the number? Ms. Shine mentioned it's gone from 60 something to 50 something recently, but overall I imagine it's been trending up since 1986. What's the peak number, and what's, you know, do you have any of that information, or Ms. Shine maybe does?
Mr. Chairman, I could give you the numbers over the last couple of years just based off of the fiscal year 18 report. I believe that goes back to fiscal year 14, but I think we could work and get you numbers over the life.
I'm assuming when it first started, it was not as popular as it is now, and not as prevalent, but I don't know. So,
Mr. Chair, we can find out and work with the sponsors aid to get back to you.
Thank you. Any other questions? Hearing seeing none, I know that we have had a bill like this last session, and I know that the bill has been changed a little bit since then to not allow, so the prescriptive authority right now is seeking simply antibiotics, and can you elaborate on what prescriptive authority you're seeking?
Yeah. Mr. Chair, the prescriptive authority that's being sought in House Bill 91 is non-controlled substances and non-chemotherapeutic agents. Everything else that would require a prescription would be allowed for naturopathic doctors under their scope.
Okay, so it's not a couple specific things. It's a whole category,
mm-hmm.
and we can probably get access to that information.
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Representative Ledoux.
So I'm confused about something.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that the entire focus of naturopathic medicine was like nature, stuff that you'd buy in health food stores and, you know, stuff like that. So if my understanding is correct, mm-hmm. then why would you want to do prescriptions like antibiotics, which mm-hmm. probably aren't natural?
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, while naturopathic doctors do focus on whole person as well as holistic healing, I believe that they are trained as well. They have the education to be able to prescribe medications, even controlled substances, although this bill is not requesting that. The naturopathic doctors, I believe, are trained in a different level. Can you heal within what you have around you with stress, life management, healthy habits? And then there's I believe, a ladder that you can go to. I believe that a prescription would be one of the last resorts in which a naturopathic doctor would seek. However, as we have more naturopathic doctors that are becoming primary care providers, there are lots of different patients that are accessing them that are looking for more of a holistic approach as well as complementary care with other providers in the state. And so I think this is just one tool in their toolbox for them to be able to address their patients' concerns if and when it gets to the point an antibiotic or a birth control prescription would be warranted. But I, if I could, Mr. Chair, I don't know if Dr. Abby Lang is online. She might be able to give a more complete answer.
Yes, Ms. Chang. Yeah, Abby Lang is online. If Ms. Lang, do you want to identify yourself and perhaps address some of these questions?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay. Hi, my name is Abby Lang. Thank you, Chairman. The question about
can you state your affiliation?
Oh, yeah. Sorry, I'm the president of the Alaska Association of Naturopathic Physicians.
Thank you.
And I am a clinic owner in Anchorage and a naturopathic doctor here since 2010.
Did you hear the
question? Answer to that question?
Yeah.
Sorry?
I was wondering if you heard the question from Representative Ledoux.
Yes, I did. Okay. Yeah, her question was, you know, naturopathic doctors focus on lifestyle medicine and other non-prescriptions, so why would we want to have prescriptive privilege, which is a good question, and we get that question a lot. Sometimes antibiotics are needed. So in the example of a kid with an ear infection, well, sometimes ear infections don't need to be treated with antibiotics, but sometimes they do. Or, you know, if you've been to the doctor and there's the wait and watch approach, see if things get better, if they don't, take this antibiotic. So in that case, if somebody would prefer to treat something naturally, we can give them, you know, a supplement or a nutraceutical or lifestyle-based prescriptions, but then give them an antibiotic prescription in case they need it. Another example would be someone who comes in, has been on birth control and just needs to have a refill on their prescription. Well, they would have to, if they came into my office and I did the exam, they would have to go pay another copay, see another provider to get that prescription. And another thing that happens a lot is people, you know, the demand is increasing for this kind of medicine. And so what people will do is they'll say, okay, I want to deal with my hypertension or my high cholesterol naturally. I don't want to take a pill for it. What can I do? So we implement diet lifestyle changes. And as they do that, they need less of their hypertension medication. They need less of their cholesterol medications. But because we can't prescribe it, we can't even titrate that dosing down. So again, they pay a double copay, go to another provider, they can wean down on those medications. So it's just sort of inefficient care in that sense.
Thank you.
So I'm just sort of...
Thank you.
Representative Ledoux?
I mean, under this bill, then other than the opioids and the cancer medication, I mean, is there a distinction between an MD and a naturopath? I mean, like, what's the difference then? Or maybe there isn't a difference.
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, the difference, as I understand it, between a naturopath and a medical doctor or an osteopathic doctor is they both have four-year medical degrees. However, a physician will be required to have a residency, and a naturopathic doctor is not required to have a residency, although some do choose to do that. And I think it's just a different approach to treating medicine.
I didn't realize that physicians were required to have residencies before they... So you're telling me that an MD, before they get an MD's license, has to go through a residency?
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, I will verify that, but that's my understanding. In one of the handouts that I did provide to the committee is an education and scope comparison for primary care providers in Alaska. And in that, you can see what sort of master's level or doctoral level they each of the providers, between a physician's assistant, nurse practitioner, a naturopathic doctor, or a medical doctor, as well as the requirements after the education. But I will get you a clear answer between the two.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
So based on the...
Can I speak to that, MD question?
Yes, you may.
Okay, great. Thank you, through the chair. My medical doctors are trained in specialties. Naturopathic doctors, we are primary care. We deal with, the primary care frontline. And so the difference with the medical doctors is a lot of them are diving really deep into specialties, and not just in cancer and in pain and controlled substances being things like pain management, but also things like testosterone. There's five classes, lots of different controlled substances. And so the medical doctors, we work a lot with medical doctors because we all bring something different to the table. We refer back and forth. I have a lot of MDs that I work with, and particularly in the specialties. And so, for example, gastroenterologists that I refer to a lot, they're doing endoscopies and colonoscopies and scoping invasive procedures that we would not be doing. Or a kidney doctor is doing biopsies, lots of surgical procedures, and more of the controlled substance medication management. There are some differences between medical doctors and naturopathic doctors, and that residency question, too, to clarify, is medical doctors, and my understanding is, except for practicing at an urgent care facility, they all do need to do a residency to be licensed.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, if I might add another layer to this discussion on comparisons, although there is a common comparison between a naturopathic doctor and a medical doctor, I'd just like to highlight that there are nurse practitioners and physician's assistants that are practicing within the same scope that's being requested, actually even a greater scope because they can prescribe controlled substances. And so their education is either equal or sometimes lesser than a naturopathic doctor.
It's my understanding that physician's assistants, for example, that prescribe drugs are doing so under the direct or indirect supervision of an MD. An MD sort of has to sign off ultimately on whatever they do. So if there is a problem, there's someone else held accountable. Is that, and LP, nurse practitioners as well, is that correct?
Through the chair, a physician's assistant is under the supervision of a medical doctor. However, nurse practitioner is not.
So based on some of this discussion here, if someone needed statins, say for high cholesterol or something for high blood pressure or some kind of hormone therapy or steroids or anything like that, that would all fall under the prescriptive authority of a naturopath if this bill were to pass.
Mr. Chairman, that's correct. I'll verify on the steroid or testosterone, and or Dr. Lang might be able to clarify that. I don't believe that they're on the scheduled drugs. The controlled substance of scheduled drugs.
So if it's not on a controlled list, then it's fair game. I mean, I see a lot of stuff advertised on TV constantly, and call your doctor for allergies or different. There's a million of them, obviously. And I don't know which ones of those are controlled. I think some of them are, I guess I don't know. So, and maybe Dr. Lang can touch on that subject.
Yes, happy to. So testosterone is classified as a controlled substance. There are different levels of controlled substances. We're excluding all of them because they're contentious and we don't need them to practice effectively. So like the things that are on TV, it depends on the medication that's being, you know, that they're advertising. So like allergy meds and things like that, they typically are all of a similar class. So they're different kinds of antihistamines that, you know, Zyrtec was one and now it's something, Zyzol, very similar mechanism, something along that, along those lines. But yeah, there's a pretty extensive list of controlled substances. Some of them are more obvious, like the opioids and things that, you know, we know of as being really potentially addictive and harmful. And then some of the ones that are a little bit more surprising, like testosterone. So it depends, and that, you know, there's no checks on what can be advertised on TV. So some of those are controlled substances, some of them aren't. It just depends on what it is.
Okay, thank you. And we'll get a list here at some point. Any other questions for any of the three testifiers? Seeing and hearing none, we'll be setting this bill aside for now. And thank you all for coming out. Thank you, Ms. Lang. And we'll take a short break. We're going to switch chairs, and we have HB 102, which is my bill, so I will not be chairing.
We're back on the record. We have one remaining item on the agenda. That's HB 102, rental vehicle by private owner. This is our first hearing. Representative Wong is here to present the bill, and I presume that his aide, Ashley Strauch, is going to come up there and join him. So, Representative Wong and Ashley, please join us.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Adam Wohl, representative from District 5 in Fairbanks, and I will read my statement here and then pass off all the heavy lifting to Ashley. This bill is about a peer-to-peer rental service, car rental service, which many people may know about, many people may not know about. So. And during this discussion today, hopefully you'll know more about it. So I'll read my statement. The ways that Alaskans procure transportation service have changed over time. In the past, getting off a commercial flight and heading to the nearest rental car agency was common practice. Now consumers are turning increasingly to ride-sharing, carpooling, and rental vehicle network options to get around. Vehicle rental networks are rental car businesses that arrange or execute personal passenger vehicle rentals through a network of individual private vehicle owners and are becoming a common alternative to traditional rental car options. HB 102 adds a definition for the new service of providing private vehicle rental programs, including these services into existing statutes that regulate car rental providers to reflect changes in how people secure transport in Alaska. It also extends the same laws and regulations which apply to rental car companies to private vehicle rental networks, including the payment of state's vehicle rental tax. Therefore, HB 102 brings equity to the rental industry for motor vehicles and will generate additional income for the state's general fund as the private vehicle rental network industry continues to grow and diversify in the Alaskan economy. So peer-to-peer rental, just a quick primer, is an app on your phone, just like Uber or Lyft. And instead of hitting your app and having someone show up to pick you up in their car and drive you around, you arrange to rent someone else's car from them. A private individual can rent a car to you for a day, a week, or a month, and you pay through the app, just like Uber. And what this bill will do is make sure that the person renting the vehicle from the other person actually pays the Alaska vehicle rental tax, which is a important part of our state revenue. And the payment will be through the app, just like on Uber or Lyft when we have fees on that app. So this bill will get us in line with the vehicle rental tax, not just for renting regular rental cars, but for doing peer-to-peer rentals.
And I see our Representative Fields has a question.
So these internet-based car rental companies don't pay car rental taxes right now?
Through the chair, Representative Fields, that is correct.
That seems surprising since they are car rental companies. Thank you.
Representative Stutz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Are you aware, do the any of these peer-to-peer groups have brick-and-mortar buildings here in the state?
Through the chair, Representative Stutz, no, they do not.
Follow-up, Madam Chair?
Go ahead.
I'm presuming that their headquarters are out of state.
Through the chair, Representative Stutz, that is correct.
So, thank you. Where are they headquartered out of? Do you have any idea?
I will pass this off to my staff member here.
For the record, Ashley Strauch, staff to Rep. Wool. The largest vehicle rental network is Turo, and I know that they have headquarters in San Francisco, California. As for other headquarters for peer-to-peer, they're not in Alaska, but I do not know what states the others are in.
Sure.
Thank you. I have lots of questions. So it sounds to me that these are companies that do all the bookkeeping and everything for the rental of other people's vehicles, and they're operating out of state. Is that correct?
Correct.
And they're paying no revenue to the state of Alaska to operate within the state of Alaska. However, the rental car companies are. Is that what I'm understanding?
Through the chair to Rep. Stutz, that is correct.
And what this bill does is it just kind of levels the playing field so everybody's playing the same game.
Through the chair to Representative Stutz, that is correct.
Thank you. Got it.
Representative Films.
I don't know if this is the right time or we should wait, but I am kind of curious. I mean, has the Department of Revenue tried to collect taxes from these rental car companies that are based in California and other places? Is there a
it's
revenue?
It's amazing that you should ask that question because we've got Brandon Stanos on board to answer any questions, and he is the Deputy Director of the Tax Division. Do you want to ask?
Yes, Mr. Spanos, has the department tried to collect taxes from these digitally based car rental companies, and what has the outcome of that effort been?
Through the chair, for the record, this is Brandon Spanos, Deputy Director with the Tax Division, and it's difficult to talk about specifics without because we have confidentiality statutes. But I can state that the statute's clear that the rental of the vehicle is taxable. Who's taxable is what this bill would make very clear, that the agency providing the vehicle for rent would be the taxpayer. I can tell you that we have gone after some of these companies to request records to determine who's renting the vehicles. There was an article in the newspaper not that long ago that noted that Turo was renting vehicles. That kind of opened our eyes to this peer-to-peer car rental service. We looked into who else was available or renting vehicles here. We did send requests for records. One of those turned into a subpoena. The subpoena was we've tried to enforce that subpoena through court in Juneau. Our subpoena language is a little bit lacking and doesn't allow us to enforce tax subpoenas outside of Alaska. So we'll have to take that subpoena to the other state's court in order to enforce it, unless we can get a statute change. So the answer is yes, we have sought to do that, but it is fairly complicated. Other states that have taxes on bed taxes have dealt with the same thing with companies like the Airbnb services and VRBO services.
I would like to ask more about deferred rep suits for now.
Oh, no, go ahead.
Go ahead with your follow-up.
So you're saying that you've tried to collect taxes and these companies are refusing to share information, although they continue to operate in Alaska. So, I mean, go ahead.
Mr. Chair, I won't say we tried to collect taxes. What we asked for were records, because it's clear that the person renting the vehicle is the taxpayer and does owe the tax. However, we don't know who that person is. So to say that the company itself is the taxpayer, our law, that's a very gray area. The statute doesn't implicitly state that the peer-to-peer car rental company is a taxpayer. Those companies didn't exist when the statute was drafted. So it doesn't identify them.
Okay,
so
well, I guess
what
I
can
just
say is that
sorry.
Do you have a follow-up?
In closing, I guess I was just going to say I find it somewhat extraordinary that these companies are operating here. Clearly, they're enabling car rental, just like brick-and-mortar facilities owned by and run with local Alaskans, and yet apparently they aren't paying taxes. And I just wonder what the remedy for what I could only, I mean, it sounds like tax evasion to me. What is the remedy for that beyond passing this bill? I mean, that just raises all kinds of questions. So thank you, Madam Chairwoman.
Was that a question?
Just that, I mean, maybe we can resolve that when we have public testimony from these companies if they call in from California.
Representative Stutz.
Thank you. I guess this is more of a comment than a question, but it appears to me that what this bill is doing then is closing a loophole because this situation didn't exist when the statute was written and there was no conception of something like this ever taking place. Am I pretty warm on that?
Yeah, through the chair to Representative Stutz, this makes the language much clearer in statute in terms of what constitutes a vehicle rental by including vehicle rental networks in the definition of vehicle rental.
Thank you.
So, Mr. Spanos, who did you say owes the tax? Is it the entity that does the bookkeeping, or is it the consumer that rents the car?
So, Madam Chair, currently the statute reads that it says there is imposed an excise tax on the charge for the lease of the rental vehicle, and it's assessed on the person renting the vehicle or making the vehicle available, which means that's really the individual, in this case, that's renting, that's putting their car on the service to be rented.
So
current statute. So basically the resident.
So it would be the Alaska residents. So, for example,
under current statute,
in my area, there are probably a number of military people who perhaps are deployed someplace else and maybe are trying to make their car payments and might rent their cars through this app. So they'd be the one that would be liable for this tax. Is that correct? Is that what you're saying?
Madam Chair, that's correct.
Thank you. Representative Hannon.
Thank you. Through the chair. Mr. Spanos, were you with the department when we first started taxing Airbnb and similar entities?
Through the chair, Representative Hannon, the state doesn't have a statewide bed tax. So unless the company is a corporation and would so that the corporate income tax would apply, there would be no state tax on them.
Okay.
Other states have dealt with that issue, though, and have created statutes to implicitly state that they're taxable.
Okay. Thank you.
So I'm not sure I'm following this. So hotels.
That's right.
Is there a hotel? Is there a statewide hotel tax, bed tax?
Madam Chair, there's not a statewide bed tax. No, municipalities do have bed taxes, but the state does not.
And do you have any idea whether or not the municipalities tax the Airbnbs the same as they do the hotels?
Madam Chair, I am... I've been told by a couple of them that they are having trouble collecting tax on those types of companies. I think some have sought to change their ordinances to create an economic nexus for those companies, taxable connection with their municipality. But I don't have specific examples. I'm not 100% sure if they have been collecting or not collecting. I do attend conferences with other states, and it is hit and miss on which states have been successful in collecting from those Airbnbs. Some are able to and some are not.
Thank you. So it looks like Representative Tallarico either has a question or an answer to my question.
Madam Chair, I can respond with my knowledge of the Denali Borough tax structure and the overnight accommodations tax. Everyone that does nightly rentals is required to register with the Denali Borough and provide the overnight accommodations tax on their rack rate, whether that be someone who rents a single cabin or possibly a hotel campus that has 400 to 500 rooms. So all are required to do that, and there is a registration for them. So they're all included, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Fayons.
My understanding, Madam Chairwoman, is that Anchorage has a 12% bed tax that applies to Airbnb.
Thank you, Representative Fayons. Do we have Representative Wall?
Well, if there are no other questions, I was just going to interject a couple, one of which has been addressed, which is who pays the tax. So similarly, when you go to the rental car counter, say at the airport, and you rent a car, there's a line item for the rental vehicle tax, which the renter pays, the consumer. But with these peer-to-peer ones, it's harder to locate all the people that are renting cars. There's could be hundreds. So instead of trying to go after each one of them, as Mr. Spanos was sort of implying, by getting the records, say, from Turo, he could have the names of all the people renting cars and basically send them all a tax bill. So instead of doing that, we just want to assess, make it on the app itself. So when you rent a car I rent a car from Ashley, let's say, and I use my Turo app to do it, the fee will come up, and also the tax will come up. I will pay that tax through my phone, through my credit card. It will go to Turo. Turo keeps some of the rental fee, gives Ashley some of the rental fee for the car. They keep some for their operating costs. But they also keep the tax, which then the tax would be paid to the state. So the state could go after just a few players that are in this business instead of trying to go after hundreds of people around the state. As far as the bed tax goes, I know people in Fairbanks, for example, friends that run their own Airbnb, and they have to register with the borough, and they have to pay their bed tax. And that's how they keep track of that, and so far they're doing it, as far as I know.
Thank you. Do we have any more questions for either Mr. Representative Fields?
I guess I would just observe that existence of a bed tax does not seem to have inhibited Airbnb's growth.
Thank you, Representative Fields. Further questions? Committee discussion?
One more comment, if I may.
Of course.
Thank you, Madam Chair. People have pointed out that the Uber technology, which is here, that I was part of enabling, people, they think there's a discrepancy here, but there really isn't, because Uber has certain fees and taxes that they must pay, too. For example, the city and borough of Juneau has a sales tax, and Uber's working with them to do that. So instead of each individual driver having to pay it, it just gets all paid through Uber. Same with the airport fee. If there's an airport fee, it's the same sort of centralized thing, and this would be no different than that.
Thank you. Anyone further? Well, then this bill is going to be held and heard again Monday, April 8th, at which time there will be public testimony. Our next meeting will be Friday, April 5th at 3:15 p.m. It is now 4:30, and we are adjourned.